The colors blue and black are the focus of an exhibition that's currently on display at the Pulitzer Arts Foundation. Engagement producer Kimberly Springer has more.
I'm here with leading contemporary artist Glenn Ligon. His art speaks to both national and international audiences about identity, race, and power. And from the curatorial side, his exhibition Blue Black, which is at the Pulitzer Arts Foundation, is being recognized for creating a dialogue among many voices. So welcome back to St. Louis, Glenn Ligon.
Thank you for having me on.
We're going to talk today about your curatorial role with the exhibition and also give our listeners some artistic and historical context. And if we have time, I'd like to talk about your encounters with some of our up-and-coming Black artists here in St. Louis.
Great.
So the catalog for Blue Black is beautiful.
Thank you.
As is your opening essay. So will you describe for our listeners the sculpture in Pulitzer's main hall and the connections it sparked for you?
Yes, certainly. The sculpture is called A Small Band, and it consists of three words rendered in neon, the words blues, bruise, and blood. And those words are very large scale. Each word is about 15 feet long and 6 feet high. They're mounted on metal stands, so you walk between them. And because they're in neon, they flash off and on. So the viewer has a very kind of interactive physical response to the pieces as well as a visual response to them. And they came about because of a complicated story based on a case in Harlem in the early 60s called the Harlem Six. A number of young men were arrested in Harlem for murder they didn't commit. They were taken to the police station, beaten, denied access to lawyers, you know, the usual.
Sounds familiar.
Yes, very familiar case. But very famous case. James Baldwin wrote an essay about them. There was a huge outcry in the civil rights community, and a benefit concert was organized for their defense fund in 1966. Minimalist composer Steve Reich, a fantastic musician, was asked to contribute a piece to this benefit concert. So he decided that the piece would be using taped testimony from these boys, these six boys who were involved in the case. So we listened to hours and hours of their testimony, them talking about how they'd been treated by the police. And he focuses in on one particular boy, Daniel Hamm, who in his testimony says he had been beaten, he was hurt, he was in the police station, but because he wasn't bleeding, they wouldn't take him to the doctor. So Hamm says, I had to open the bruise up to let some of the bruised blood come out to show them that I had been beaten. And Steve Reich focuses on just that little point, you know, open the bruise up to let some of the bruised blood come out to show them. And he makes a tape loop of that. And that becomes the piece. It's called Come Out. And it's simply Daniel Hamm's voice repeating over and over and looped on itself. So you hear it singly, then you hear it doubled, then you hear it quadrupled. So it turns the sort of speech into a kind of abstraction and noise. But there's an interesting thing in the recording, which took me a long time to notice, is that when Daniel Hamm says, I had to open the bruise up to let some of the bruised blood come out to show them, he actually makes a slip of the tongue. He says, bruised blood.
Okay.
And that slip between bruise and blues I thought was really interesting because if you think about the blues in the way writer Ralph Ellison thought about it, he says the blues is personal catastrophe expressed lyrically. So the blues has always had this sense of trauma and difficulty and tragedy in it, but also transcendence, you know, of moving on, moving out, you know, getting away. So that sense of like bruising and the blues and blood all sort of being together in Daniel Hamm's testimony became the basis of this piece.
So were you thinking about that before you were asked to curate this exhibit?
Yes, that piece was actually made for Venice Biennale, which happened 3 years ago. And I was invited to do a piece for the facade of the main pavilion at the Venice Biennale. And so came up with that piece. So you can imagine that piece was on the 20 feet up on the side of a building. Mm-hmm. but the piece is so large that it didn't actually fit in the Pulitzer space. So that's when I decided that it should go on stands and be sort of skewed in the space so that people could walk around it. So what became a piece that you experience like a sign on the side of a building became a piece that you could walk around as a viewer.
And it's really interesting that you talk about interacting with it, because I noticed that I did this myself, but I also noticed that people were trying to be behind their cameras and take pictures of it,
right,
and trying to get all the lights at this in sequence, but they couldn't do it. So you had to remove your camera and really be there with it.
Right. And I really like the idea of, you know, a piece that is basically, it's text. You can read it. It's three words. But it's also physical. You move around them. And the way a viewer interacts with the piece is really interesting because of that movement.
Yeah. Well, I came to your work through your text-based practice, so the way that you use words in your different paintings and through different medium. But I was wondering about how you bring yourself as an artist to being a curator.
It's a very different hat, and the Pulitzer Foundation was a fantastic place to work as a curator because they don't seem to believe in the word no over there.
Lucky for you.
Very lucky. Very lucky for me. So so the institution was quite behind, you know, everything that I wanted to do, whether it was tracking down some far-flung painting and, you know, I'm bringing it to St. Louis, or doing a beautiful catalog for the show. Or everything was a yes, and that was an ideal situation. But initially, I confess that the show was not supposed to be a curatorial project. It was meant to initially be a solo show of my work.
Okay.
But when I first came to St. Louis and walked into the Pulitzer Foundation's building, beautiful building by the Japanese architect Tadao Ando. Installed inside that building is a piece called Blue Black by the artist, late artist Ellsworth Kelly. It is a 28-foot high wall sculpture, painted metal, blue on the top and black on the bottom. And so when you're walking around in the building, which has been open for about 10 years, I believe, that piece is permanently installed. So every show that's been at the Pulitzer Foundation in some ways is in dialogue with Ellsworth Kelly's Blue Black. So I was doing my site visit, looking at the building, thinking about what work of mine could work in the show, you know, in those beautiful spaces. And I kept coming back to the Ellsworth Kelly. And at some point I said, well, you know, Blue Black, you could do a whole show around the two colors in that work, and just started naming the artists, you know, David Hammons, Chris Afili, Andy Warhol, et cetera, et cetera. And the director of the foundation, Kara Stock, said, no, actually nobody has done a show around those two colors. And I thought, well, that's a more interesting...
Here I am.
Here I am. That's a more interesting project than anything I could think of just showing my work. So I decided to put on the curator hat and start thinking about an exhibition that would bring together a range of artists that have used those colors, blue and black, in combination in their work.
And it's a wonderful range of artists working in different mediums. So is there a piece that was on your wish list that you were delighted to get?
Oh, there were many, many, many things. There's a fantastic painting by the artist Kerry James Marshall. It's of a black police officer in uniform sitting on the hood of his car. I think it was newly acquired by the Museum of Modern Art, and I know kind of how museums work, and if they get something pretty recently, they don't really want to lend it out.
It's our new toy.
But in some ways, I thought that piece was, besides it being a beautiful painting, fit so nicely into many of the concerns I had about the show. So that was high on the wish list, and I was quite thrilled to get that painting for the exhibition.
And you talked about dialogue and creating a conversation. And so when I was there, I tried to sit in front of different pieces and figure out, like, what's the conversation here and what's the dialogue you're trying to create. But I was wondering if, with the way you grouped the different artists, were you trying to make any kind of statement about an artistic movement that was happening? because it brought to mind the Harlem Renaissance and the way different kinds of art came together, but also the Black Arts Movement of the late 1960s and 1970s.
Right. Well, there, I'm basically an abstract painter, even though most of my work uses text. So I'm always interested in abstraction. So there is a room in the show that has a lot of abstract work in it. Artists who were working in the 40s and 50s, like Norman Lewis, next to artists like Richard Poussett Dart or Jack Whitten. So these are artists working sometimes in the same time period, Poussett Dart and Norman Lewis. But also Jack Whitten's painting in the show has a sort of formal resonance with those earlier works. But also I think, you know, curators, well, the nice thing that curators get to do is put things together that wouldn't often be together. So to mix up time periods, to look at something that was made yesterday and put it next to something that was made 50 years ago and sort of through that juxtaposition try to think about the continuities between certain historical moments and their ruptures. And so that was fun in the show, you know, is also I'm not trained as an art historian, so I didn't feel the need to put only the artists who worked in the 50s with the artists that worked in the 50s. I could mix it up a bit.
Have there been any reactions to the show that have surprised you or ways people have looked at it that you hadn't anticipated?
Well, what's been surprising about the reaction to the show is that often abstraction is difficult for people, you know. But I think the show, because it mixes sculpture, photography, abstract painting, figurative painting, neon, words, that I think the abstraction kind of engages people on a level that I hadn't expected, you know. And makes sense in the show. I mean, the show has a very simple premise in a way. It's work that has blue and black in it. So once you know that, it's easy kind of to look at things. But then once you've gone beyond that level, there's so many other ways to enter the work, you know, to think about how blue and black is used in an indigo cloth from Africa versus how it's used in an abstract painting that might actually be looking at those very cloths, you know, or to think about how work might have the colors blue or black in it, but not actually show them. You know, there's a piece by a filmmaker named Derek Jarman. The film is called Blue. Now, there's no black in there, but the idea of blackness is in the text that you hear when you are looking at the film. You know, the film is literally a blue screen, but the idea of blackness is there.
And I also thought about sitting in that dark room as the black as well.
Exactly.
So using the space. And I thought, that's a great way to do an installation.
Exactly.
So on your previous trips to St. Louis, you met with a number of really talented black local artists. Is there any advice about the art world that you gave them that you could share with us?
Well, as you said, there were amazing artists in St. Louis who were not only doing fantastic work, but were incredibly generous with their time and energy, sort of filling me in on the local art scene, filling me in on the politics of St. Louis and their experience working here, living here. So my hat's off to them for really giving me a good education about what it means to be working, living in St. Louis. And those dialogues that I had with them really informed the show greatly, you know, to help me really think about the show. I think in terms of advice, the one thing that I found was super useful to me when I was a young artist was the idea that you always have to be ready, you know, that you never know who's going to walk in the door. And that's played out in my career in lots of different ways, you know, going to a party, meeting a art writer that I know and saying, oh, I've read your work. You know, I quite like it. I have this little show. Don't bother. You know, I know you're busy. Don't bother. Come see it. And him saying, oh, yes, yes, I will definitely come see your show. Well, he did come see the show. And then the next week in the paper in New York, I was reading and there was this guy, his picture, new curator at the Museum of Modern Art.
Wow.
And I thought, oh.
Serendipity.
This is serendipity. But I find, strangely enough, that a lot of the good things that have happened in my career have been through this kind of serendipity of talking to people, of being at an opening, but also by having dialogues with other artists, too. Half of the things that have happened because of other artists, you know, recommending me for a show or talking to an art dealer about my work.
So is that networking? Because networking has, you know, sort of business connotations to it. What is that for artists?
Yeah, I suppose one could call it networking, but really it is about building community, you know. And that was the really nice thing about talking to the artists that I met here, was they all seemed to like each other. You know, artists don't always like each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to deal with each other, but they don't always like each other. And that's what was very impressive here, that they liked each other, that they were interested in each other's work, that they could talk about each other's work intelligently. So you really got the sense of they had each other's back in that kind of deep, profound way.
That's great. Well, the exhibition isn't traveling, is that correct?
No, it's not traveling. It's really for St. Louis.
So that means if you want to see the exhibition Blue Black, and trust me, you really do, you have until October 7th to view the show at the Pulitzer Arts Foundation here in Grand Center. Thank you so much for being here, Glenn Ligon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That's engagement producer Kimberly Springer. That's it for us for today. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.